pervy teens, child seduction, abusive boyfriends, severed fingers and toes with a heaping helping of fart, piss, and puke jokes. We take off the rose-colored lenses of nostalgia. Today, we're talking the Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Y'all ready to bust some ass?
That is one big pile of shit.
And welcome to the Nostalgic Harpoon. I am your host, Mike Mitchell, and with me, my hetero life mate, Talon Cummings.
Hello.
Today, first off, we're going to talk about the show a little bit. Talon and I have known each other for quite a long time, and we both are fans of very nostalgic flicks, right?
Oh, yeah.
What are some of your favorites?
Oh, we gotta have the Ninja Turtles movies, Power Ranger movies. We got Hook and Drop Dead Fred, which is a lot of the ones that we're gonna be going over in the following months.
And the thing about it is, a lot of us haven't gone over some of those older movies since we were kids, and we thought it would be fun to revisit some of the movies that we had watched a lot when we were children. Some of the, you know, the VHS. Everyone has, as a kid, that VHS or DVD that they wore out that they watched over and over and over again. And, you know, we look at them through, you know, very rose-colored lenses, so to speak. And most of them don't necessarily hold out.
You could say that again. Wow.
Well, today I think we're going to take a look at our first movie, the Garbage Pail Kid movie. This was one that I watched a lot as a kid. I don't think you did necessarily, did you?
I never watched it until recently when you wanted me to watch it, but it's something else.
so you're blaming me for this shit, right?
I'm blaming you for the hour and 40-some minutes that I'll never get back.
That you'll never get back. Yeah. This was a movie that when I was a kid, the only place I ever saw it was in our local mom and pop shop. And I remember being, of course, I grew up, you know, I'm almost 10 years older than you, if not, yeah, you know, a year or two more. So I grew up in the 80s where the Garbage Pail Kids were, you know, they were really in. And, you know, every time we would go to the gas station or something like that down the road, my mom would always buy me a pack of these things. And I remember going to this little mom and pop shop video store and our local, you know, in the local town of Cloverdale, Indiana, where I grew up, and I saw the Garbage Pail Kid movie, and I remember almost shitting my pants, thinking this is going to be the most brilliant thing ever conceived.
Boy, are you wrong.
I loved it, though. I truly did. And it was, you know, I would beg my parents to rent it over and over and over again. And it even went so far as I remember taking my little tape recorder, little cassette tape recorder, and putting it up next to the speaker and recording scenes so I could listen to on the bus on the way to school. Wow. Yeah, so I was, one could say I was just a tad bit obsessive with this bullshit. But, you know, I hadn't seen it for years upon years upon years. And thanks to the internet, I was finally able to watch it again. And holy shit, I didn't have good taste as a kid.
No, not at all. It makes me question your entire childhood.
It made me do the same. I remember thinking, you know, it was such a brilliant movie back in the day. And as I was watching it, I was thinking, you know what? What were these people thinking when they were making this movie? I mean, first off, I mean, let's just delve right into it. The movie opens up, you know, giving us the opening credit title sequence,
which is just outer space with a full view of the Earth with some quote unquote Garbage Pail Kid cards for the intro for all the main characters, which I understand that portion, but I don't understand our space.
when they showed the actors, I think it worked, you know, really well. That was, you know, yeah, an interesting way of showing that. But when, you know, when they got into, you know, Anthony Newley as Captain Manzini and, Mackenzie Astin, who is brother of, you know, Sean Astin, who's, you know, most
huge,
famously in,
80s,
yeah, you know, one of the Goonies, and many other, and then came back again with the Lord of the Rings movies.
And 51st Dates without
And 51st Dates. Because you instantly go to an Adam Sandler flick instead of Lord of the Rings. But when they get to the actual, you know, Garbage Pail Kids, it's just, you know, they don't even say who they were played by or voiced by. I mean, it was just like, okay, Wendy Winston is in this movie. Like, he is an actual person.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's this giant spacefaring trash can. I think they were trying to do a parody of Star Wars.
I think so, but at the same time, it doesn't make any sense for the movie. There's nothing to do with space, and they don't show anything outside of the world after that at all. No other universe or anything. So I'm not sure where they were going with a giant space station trash can.
Well, and that's something I always wonder too, because they talk about, you know, when as the movie starts, you know, you don't really you get a sense that the kids have gotten out of their garbage pail. And it opens, the whole movie takes place mainly in this really shitty junk, you know, store.
Antique shop.
Antique shop is full of junk. Owned by Captain. It's not Captain.
Yeah.
According to the card, it's Cap'n. Like, he's, you know, like he's somehow related to Cap'n Crunch.
Yeah, cereal. Freaking mascot.
Who owns this antique store. And God love Anthony Newley. If you don't know who he is, I'm not surprised, but he was a huge actor back, you know, in the early days, you know, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know, of good cinema. And he was very popular, and this was sadly his last cinematic outing. So, I mean, if you're going to go out, let's go out of the hole. Bag. And you don't see the children, as he calls them. You just hear them kind of making a commotion. Yeah.
And so this is one of the things I wanted to touch on is the very opening scene, because I think you can understand what's going on a little bit as the movie goes on as an adult, but as a kid, I think that opening scene might frighten you, because it's real dark, all you hear is a lot of noises, and see feet running around, and like something's going to happen. I think it would make you feel more anxious and scared for what's going to happen rather than to excite you when you're younger.
It reminded me a lot of the scenes in the first Child's Play movie before they did the whole reveal of, you know, Chucky is this living doll.
Exactly.
Is it because they just showed the feet, you know, running, and it was obviously, you know, a person in a suit, which is pretty much what the Garbage Pail Kids are in this. It's a bunch of midgets in the most terrifying and poorly animated animatronic suits in the world. But it always did kind of scare me a little bit, and I don't know if that was a holdover from like the original script, because I had to go on IMDb and look this up. And I was looking at some of the trivia, and apparently that this movie was originally due to be directed by a guy named John Carl Buechler, who is big on like the low budget horror scenes. He was, you know, did a lot of eighties, you know, early to mid nineties stuff. And he wanted to take it as a serial killer movie, that these were dolls that had been transformed by mutagenic waste of some kind that had somehow gotten into a garbage pail. And they were gonna go on a murderous rampage, which screams kids movie.
it just would have made the movie about 1,000 times better. At least there would have been some sense to what was going on.
It would have been fantastic, and I would pay good money to see that movie today. I mean, as a movie that was aimed towards kids. But we see, you know, they get out somehow, and they're running around, and it seems like they're almost, it would seem like that this is a regular occurrence. Because Anthony Newley comes up, Captain Mancini comes up, he's like, if I find anybody out here, I'd be pleasantly surprised or some shit like that. So it sounds like this is something that happens a lot. But when they finally get out and they introduce our main character, Dodger, to him, played by Mackenzie Astin, who promptly left Hollywood for the longest time after this, he makes it seem like they've been in there for decades.
And what I don't understand, if they're able to escape all the time like that, and then they always run back in for some reason, when they finally escape again, but during the daytime when Dodger out there, they won't go back in, and he can't force them back in, so how were they not out of it in the first place?
And how did they get in there? How did they get in there to begin with? I mean, who was like, all right, you kids, your heads, your mouths don't match what you're saying, so you need to get in this goddamn garbage pail. What kind of a solution is that?
And not only that, but how do they all fit in it? Is there some kind of space-time kind of gravity magic going on that condenses them all into it? Or
right, that's something else that's never talked about, is that how do these, you know, because they're played by midgets.
Oh, yeah.
Or little people, or however you want to be PC about it. And, I mean, like, Greaser Greg is played by Phil Fondacaro, who, you know, I know you're not good with, you know, acting names, but yeah. You would have seen, you know who he is. You've seen him in a billion, you know, low-budget flicks.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, anybody listening to this, some of you will probably know who Phil Fondacaro is by name. If you don't, go look him up on IMDb, you'll recognize him instantly. So, I mean, they're regular-sized little people, but there's, what, seven of them or so?
Yeah, about.
And they fit into a regular sized garbage pail. So it never really talks about how do they fit into this thing. I mean, yeah, is there some kind of weird, you know, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey shit? Is it like the Doctor Who's TARDIS? Is it bigger on the inside? And if so, how do they survive? Because they have to eat.
Yeah, they work just like normal people do. But
they're constantly eating. And I don't think it's ever really said if they're normal people or not. If they're just kind of, you know, maybe deformed or. But one of them is a talking alligator.
True. Good old alligator. Then, not only along with the fact that it's hinted that they've been in there forever, but it's hinted that at least Captain Mancini's at least been around as long as they've been in the trash can, because he's had this trash can for what seems to be centuries. And
right.
And they never explain how he is somehow immortal.
Well, yeah, because he's always talking about, you know, simpler times, you know, because he's got the sword, and he's like, you know, and people, we could settle their differences, but at the end of a sword, then some damn fool invented gunpowder, then some other damn fool split the atom. Like, mm-hmm. were you born in like the mid 1700s? Because he's always trying to do magic.
Yeah,
he's asking for like Ivan Nude, the shadow of your smile.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, he does, you know, there are scenes where he manages to turn on the washing machine.
Machine with magic.
Via magic, yeah. Which, I mean, is useful, I suppose, in a limited capacity. I mean, I don't feel like getting up from my chair. Huzzah!
Well, I mean, maybe it could work without even electricity or anything that way, so you don't ever even have to use power. So, I mean, it could be useful.
Right. So, enter, you know, we've already talked to him a little bit, but our hero Dodger, you know, the first time we see him, he's getting chased down by bullies.
Who have to be at least 10 years older than him.
Oh, I would say they're, you know, mid to late 20s, if anything. They set it up that Dodger, what did you say, he was 14?
14. He claims he's 14, almost 15, so that he can be a tough guy.
So, when the bullies catch up to him, the first thing they do is go to rob him. How much money did you normally carry with you as a 14-year-old?
Maybe $5. Right. Like allowance? Then, that was it?
And then they get bitchy because he didn't have any money. I mean, if you're going to start rolling people, you might want to hit up at least the 17 to 18-year-olds, because then they most likely have a job.
You know, yeah, I mean, he had a job, but I don't really know if he got paid. Because, I mean, he kind of, like, lived there.
He did. We never see his home life, you know, if he has parents or anything like that, or if they're suspecting of why he's coming home with bruises and why he's, you know, taking baths with this strange old man in the same room.
Oh. Yeah.
But... But they're the most ineffective bullies ever, and they just seem to be wasting their time. They've got nothing. They never state what town they're in,
never.
But there doesn't seem like there's anything to do in that town except harass the one 14-year-old.
Yeah, you know, his quote unquote love interest just states that it's some kind of town that she, you know, she's not going to be stuck in for the rest of her life. She's going to go to Hollywood. So it's got to be like a little town, no-name place.
Right.
Like a mom and pop store or something on the corner and like a park.
And let's talk about that for a second. This is, the movie was made in the early 80s. I want to say it was made in 85, but I could be a year.
I think
too
it was like 86,
and
but.
Yeah. And it is very 80s. It is very, very 80s. Like, the bully, our quote unquote villain of the flick, is named Juice.
Juice, yeah.
And the love interest is Tangerine.
And then.
So.
I don't think they give the other two bullies a name at all.
They never did. So I always called them, you know, random bully number two, and then the Amazon, because this woman's
huge,
big. This woman, she could crush your head in between her thighs like a grape and not notice that it happened.
Oh yeah, she's a big girl.
Think of if you're she was. She reminds me of the Futurama Amazons.
We watch Shnoo Shnoo.
Shnoo Shnoo. And Mishni, if you're listening, we do love you, honey.
But, like, then she's bigger than the bully that they use for muscle, that is, like, their go-to thug with the sunglasses.
Right, and the obsequious mesh shirt.
Yeah.
And the only reason he got the part is because he was the director's son. So the director went, who I guess he died shortly after, most likely of embarrassment for making this movie.
The worst part is not only did he get the part because of that, but I think he had a total of one line in the entire movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, he did.
Made me look like a monkey after he got shown up with basketball.
Oh no, that's right. He did. Then he had exactly two lines. He had that one, and then the scene in the hot tub.
Oh yeah, brown water.
Where he's
oh, no.
Like, "You don't think?" He's like, "Oh yeah." And
man.
But they end up rolling poor Dodger again. Another just bad 80s name, and who he eventually makes it back to the shop where he's apparently been working in the store for a couple months, and really that's the first time he's asked about this giant garbage pail with slime covering the side of it, or really has taken any notice of it, because the way it seemed like it was sitting right in the middle of the walkway,
which is only about what, a good two rooms of 5x5,
if that.
I mean, it's a tiny shop, and the garbage pail takes up a good third of a room.
Right. I mean, it's a full size, you know, it's probably like, you know, a 10-gallon garbage pail. So later when Tangerine comes back, you know, we really get a sense of where this movie goes, because it starts to get really pervy. Because first off, it's very obvious that Dodger has a thing for Tangerine, which Tangerine's a very pretty woman. And in fact, if you look at her on IMDb now, she's still a very attractive young lady. But yeah, so she seduces him at one point in the movie, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But he sniffs her. He's trying to sell her buttons. Okay, first off, he's trying to sell her buttons.
Because she creates clothes, and he's trying to sell her something for her creations.
That's her thing, and that becomes a huge crux of the movie. Oh. is fashion. She's a fashion designer, quote unquote, who sells her wares at
this
local club.
Yeah.
And so she stops by Cap Manzini's place to find, you know, odd knickknacks or something like that to sew onto it, because as we all know, the whole point of 80s fashion was finding the most gaudy shit you could find and sew it onto any piece of clothing that
you
could find.
I need this hot glue gun and a handful of buttons and
we'll bedazzle this bitch. So he's trying to sell her these buttons. He's like, "Well, we got buttons, all kinds of really neat buttons," and she's leaning in and he sniffs her. Like something you would see on Silence of the Lambs.
A Dateline.
Right. I'm surprised he didn't shove her into a hole and start singing "It Puts a Lotion on Its Skin."
It rubs the lotion on its skin. Then in comes Juice, because he constantly knows where Tangerine is at all times without any kind of prior knowledge.
Right. And we get our first, I hesitate to call it action sequence, because it's really not.
No, but it's as close as we're going to get.
The bullies start chasing him around, and, like, random bully mesh shirt man, he's chasing, Juice tells him to go beat him up, so he chases him around the place until Dodger grabs hold of a basketball and in true 80s fashion starts spinning it on his finger like someone from the Harlem Globetrotters and instantly mesmerizes random bully number one. Like, yeah. He had never seen this before.
like he just went to some kind of circus and they had somebody from distant country just on display.
He manages to elude him by the dumbest tricks. Like, he's sliding under shit, you know, and he's spinning a basketball and throws it at him.
Under his feet. And...
Right. I was waiting for him to knock over a bowl of, like, marbles, and, you know, you get the whole Scooby-Doo. Whoop, 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 whoop. But they take him, they finally get a hold of Dodger, and they take him down to the sewer, where they turn on the sewage, because this is the most easily...
First, they knock over the trash can.
Right. They knock over the trash can, and it starts spewing this green ooze, which freaks him out.
But
and
then,
I would, too.
Yeah, but you think you'd pay attention to that and see what's going on there, but they just completely ignore the radioactive trash can.
Right.
I decide.
I'm pretty sure Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were around by then, and I was like, "Whoa,
well,
we could have something here."
They might have just dragged some of it down the sewers on their feet, and then just started it from there.
TGRI. But yeah, so they turn on the sewage.
Well, they try to. Juice and Random Thug Mesh Shirt Man try to, and they can't. So Amazon comes over and does it with, like, her pinky.
Right. So she goes and shows him what's up, and you know, and that was probably one of the only believable scenes in the movie because Juice isn't that big. Neither is Random Bully Number One, but Amazon Woman she's a beast.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess with her.
And then we get our first glimpse of the Garbage Pail Kids.
As they come and rescue him from the spewing sewage all over him.
Right, because, you know, they live in a giant garbage pail full of green goo, so why the hell not?
Yeah.
But really, I think the close-ups that they did of them really showed the problem. Because you could see the separations in the heads. And the mouths never match up to what they're saying.
Half of them don't move 90% of the time. Their mouths are, like, solid. And they're not even, like, puppets.
And they never close, either.
Yeah,
so,
it's constantly open.
I mean, they've got to have terrible dry socket for 90% of the time. But we get introduced to the stars of the movie. We have... Let's run the names down here. And we have to think, you know, for the most part, we're led to believe these are actual humans.
Basically.
That had parents that named them this. Okay?
Yeah.
We have Wendy Winston.
We got, was it Valerie Vomit?
Valerie Vomit. Greaser Greg, who was played by Phil Fondacaro.
We've got Gross, Gross Greg.
The baby?
Yeah. Gross Greg.
Foul Phil.
Foul Phil, that's it.
Foul Phil. And they all play this, you know, the double letter wordplay. We got Nat Nerd.
Yeah, we got Alligator.
Alligator. He's the only one that doesn't play that double.
Yeah.
That double A.
They play one of the pun with him.
Right. And Messy Tessie.
And I believe that's it.
Yes.
All seven of them. So, yeah.
Seven of them. And, you know, naturally, each one of them, these are based on the Garbage Pail Kids. So, you know, you're going to run with the, you know, the gross out jokes. I mean, it is a kid's movie, but I think they're all human with the exception of Alligator. He's a walking, talking alligator that no one seems to bat an eye when he pulls out his lunchbox. He pulls out a first aid box. And when he opens it up, it's full of severed fingers and toes.
And eyeballs.
Human eyeballs. And what I can only guess is a thermos full of blood.
Well, imagine so. I mean, it would.
He never opens it, but that's the only thing I think. And openly eats eyeballs, human eyeballs, in front of people.
And
which, it's got to be the darkest part of this movie.
Well, it's close, I would say. In the end, there's a nice dark scene, too.
Yeah, true. But, I mean, and then he's always, you know, claiming he's going to try to eat other... He tries to eat Dodger's toes at one point.
Yeah.
When apparently he likes them fresh.
When he's in the tub.
Right.
Circled he's like, by he's, the Garbage Pail Kids and...
The Garbage Pail Kids.
Captain Red City.
And so...
And they
we find out that the Garbage Pail Kids can sew.
Well, they can sew out of nowhere. They just hop right on a machine and make apparently what is some of the greatest clothes Tangerine the fashion designer has ever seen.
It's it looks like a Canadian tuxedo, because they give Dodger, you know, to get rid of his smelly clothes, they give him this, you know, these jean pants, his jean vest that they've bedazzled the shit out of. But when he goes to stand up, and they give him a towel, and Messy Tessie seems really interested in looking at his junk.
Yeah, I was about to say, they don't shy away from the fact that the girls are definitely checking out his package.
Right. I mean...
And we're led to believe that these... they're not just kids, they're probably like 6, 8. And they're young kids.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's...
But see, I would say they're not, though, because it's obvious that he's had them for decades.
Well, yes, but that's where, like, the mindset /
right
height is what it's supposed to be at.
So then I guess that leads you to think, are these kids, like, you know, mentally handicapped? Are they, you know, is their growth stunted or what? But yeah, so she's obviously checking out poor Dodger's junk. And we get, you know, the happy sappy, you know, thing about, they're telling them to stay away from the normal people because the normies, because they hate them.
Because they're ugly.
And Captain Mancini gives this, you know, very nice speech about, you know, what the ugly doesn't come from the outside. What it is, you know, dark, you know, ugly in spirit. And nature and deeds, and then they're just like, you know, what a load of crap.
that didn't go over so well.
And poor Anthony Newley is acting his ass off.
The only one giving a decent show.
He is actually, I was more interested in his character than anyone else. I want to see a movie that's nothing but Captain Mancini. Right. I want to see him, you know, because he was talking about, you know, being in, you know, in Southern Africa. I want to see his trips. You know, we could have like a whole Indiana Jones style.
I just want to see him, like, when he hits adulthood, and then just through the ages, all the different centuries past, how he fits in with everything. And that's how he changes with the world.
I think it'd be brilliant. You know, and we wouldn't have to watch, you know, poorly animated midgets. But so we find out that, you know, they can sew, and that kind of becomes the whole crux of the situation. But they also mention that there are other friends. I don't think they're family of any kind, except for the fact that they live in a garbage pail together. But they also talk about that they've got other friends that are missing that we never see.
Not once, but they search through them for the entire movie.
Right, so, and they're looking. They eventually end up getting out, and before that, Dodger ends up going with Tangerine to sell her clothing.
Yes,
because
he literally bends over backwards to do anything for her.
He does. It's almost an unhealthy obsession.
Oh yeah, he basically is a stalker. Let's just throw it out there. He watches her from the window on the street.
She lives in someone's basement, and it's one of the things. It's an underground basement, so it's got the window on the street level, and he stalks her through that. Stalks her home, just walks into her room unannounced.
Which that's one of the things that really disturbed me, because he just literally walks in what I would imagine is an apartment building, and then just
it seems like then just.
Straight to her room. He knows the exact pathway to there, knows that her door's cracked open, and then just, like, knocks as entering. It wasn't even just knock and I come in, it was knock and then push the door open.
Right. But when they're out trying to sell her clothes at one of the night at the nightclub, We, this is, someone wants to sell her, wants to buy her shirt.
The one that she's wearing, not one that she brought.
Yeah, the one that she's wearing. So they ask how much is it, and she's like, you know, 15. She's like, sold. So she starts pulling off her shirt, you know, and she's wearing a very sheer bra. You can see through it.
Very lazy.
They keep the camera high enough that there's no nip slip going on.
No, but it's just above nipple level.
So it's just above nipple level.
Plenty of cleavage.
And Dodger goes catatonic, staring at her.
And he doesn't. I'm pretty sure he forgets to breathe for a good 5 minutes.
It looks like it. It truly does, because she asks him to hand him a shirt and to put on, there. And he just sits there and stares, and she doesn't really
mind.
I think acknowledge the fact. Yeah, she's just like, boobies, look at these. I got them, you don't. I
think she dislikes the power in this thing.
I think she does, too.
Really?
But she also seems very, she seems very sympathetic towards Dodger at some, you know, for the most of the movie.
No.
You know, she feels bad that Juice beats up on him. And it almost makes you think that the way Juice treats her, she's in a very,
abusive relationship.
He beats her.
Yes.
Yeah.
But getting back to the nightclub, though, is what, another thing that is weird to me, and that you think any parent would be concerned, or even Captain Mancini, who is a very father-esque figure to him, is they start driving to the club when it's gotta be 5-6 o'clock, it's still bright out, and then they get to the club, it's dark, so Juice pulls up in his van to claim the money that she has made, and he escapes over to the side and gets inside of the empty duffel bag that had the clothes in it, and they drive off, and he walks home. So you think they'd have to have been driving for a couple of hours to get to this nightclub.
And not only that, when he gets into the car with her, and it's still obviously daylight, he asks her, what do we do when we get there? Then it cuts, and it's obviously pitch black. It's been at least an hour's worth of drive time. They're on the highway when they were sitting right next to the thing, and then she answers, like, what, you mean how to sell the clothes?
Yep.
So was she sitting there for the entire hour just mulling over what he meant by what do we do when we get there?
The possibility of that, or she just completely ignored him for a good hour. And then forces him to just walk on, maybe on the highway for a good, you know, hours worth of driving back to Cadmantine's. But somehow he still gets back there at a decent time at night. To visit with the Garbage Pail Kids. So, I don't know how it happened,
It's this timey-wimey, dude. It's just like the Garbage Pail, you know? Fuck it, it does what it wants. But, when they get back, they make this suit for Dodger. To impress her. So he goes, this is where he stalks her. He goes to her apartment and he's looking down, watching her. She could possibly be getting dressed. She could be, you know, asleep, naked. She could be, you know, getting it on with Juice. Doesn't matter. He's still staring down into her window. And then creeps down into her bedroom without acknowledging it and starts talking to her. And she's just like, oh, hey, Dodger.
Like an everyday occurrence.
Now, what are you doing here? Why are you in my room? Are you stalking me? How did you get home last night? You know?
how you doing? Just hi.
So, and he's wearing this really god awful jacket.
It looks like makes him look like a matador. Really? I mean,
it's very Matador meets Michael Jackson, and they even kind of acknowledge that when he starts moonwalking for the most briefest second out of nowhere. So she falls in love with this jacket, and he tells her that he made it. So they enter into this kind of devil's agreement where, you know, he makes, you know, at least a dozen outfits. And this is where her character totally changes.
Oh, completely.
I wonder if it was, you know, intentional, because maybe she sees, you know, all of a sudden she sees an out with him, and, you know, she could steal his work and this, that, the other, and then it just turns her into a total bitch, or if it just served the ease of the writing.
I'm not sure.
But she talks him into making a dozen or so more outfits
after she seduces him.
When she's
clearly at least 10 years older than him, and he's a minor.
Oh, She pulls off her jacket and she's wearing this, you know, very, if you watched Married with Children, it's a very Kelly Bundy-esque outfit.
It really is. And then she lays down on like one of those therapist style couches and just completely opened her legs and then closed them across.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just to show off the goods to make sure that he's completely in pearl.
You want this baby? You need at least a dozen more outfits. So he goes back to the Garbage Pail Kids and talks them into doing the outfits for him so he can impress her, and it leads into one of the most jarring sequences in the entire movie.
Before we get into this is only one of two scenes where they've left so far. The first scene was ridiculous because they decided that they wanted to get something to eat, and you see a Pepsi delivery man.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And he's delivering to some kind of a pizza shop or something somewhere, and you see them drive off with the Pepsi truck. For some reason, the keys are still attached to his pants with one of the zip cords. I don't know why the keys in the back of the truck attach to his pants still, but they just haul off and just.
Oh, it's one of those things. It's sort of like one of the things that you can hang onto your your keys.
But what I'm saying is, I'm not sure.
Into like a retractable.
Yeah, I'm not sure why the keys still in though when he's like 5 feet away.
Well, I think they kind of are supposed to, we're supposed to assume they grabbed it and pulled it.
Maybe.
But wouldn't you have noticed? I would have.
Pretty much. And then they begin to steal the Pepsi truck and rip this man's pants off. And he's just wearing, heart boxers just standing in the middle of the street.
The very cartoony Hardy boxers. And it's Greaser Greg and Valerie Bama, and Greg is on the floor pushing the pedals while Valerie drives.
And for no good reason, and this doesn't have anything to do with the story or anything, and somehow doesn't affect the future of the story because it just reappears. They just run into his van as he jumps out of the way, and it doesn't just run through the van, it literally smashes it as if it was crushed. Just crushes it like it was some kind of one of those machines at the dump that crushes the cars into cubes. Smashes it flat.
It was like they were driving a monster truck.
And then they just drive away, and then when they get to this the hobo-esque bonfire that the rest of them have set up in a trash can.
Because they had been looking for their friends. They had showed them, you know, just like kind of looking into other garbage pails, which begs you to think, is that what they all do? Then you start to think, are they a separate species? Are they Oscar the Grouch?
They could be. But then they get to this hobo-esque campfire. And everybody has stolen something different for the campfire. Hot dogs, chips. They stole this entire Pepsi truck for one six-pack.
That for they pull a six-pack?
Out of the back of the truck. They don't need any more, just one six-pack.
Because I'm just thinking in the writer's room, if there was a writer's room, alright, we need a sequence where these little kids, who are supposed to be our heroes, and the paragons of, you know, of good virtue, we need to them to steal a Pepsi truck because it's a kids movie.
You know, Pepsi probably paid a buttload to throw that in there just to have a whole, like, what is it, 5 minute scene of just showing a Pepsi truck and then Pepsi cans, and then
the thing is, she steps out and she just blatantly spews Pepsi's slogan at the time. Hey, we're the Pepsi generation! Ha!
then they just end the scene with them, like, close up on the fire and then backed away to them, like, how somehow gotten drunk, apparently.
Oh, yeah, they're acting like, I think it's supposed to be that they ate too much.
Yeah, and then they're sitting in the basement, but they're acting like they're completely hungover because Dodger comes with a bunch of groceries and asks them if they want something. Alligator goes, not unless you got something for a hangover.
Right. and but they do end up getting drunk later in the movie.
Which is actually just about what we're just going to talk about with the next scene where they decide to sew all the clothing.
Yeah, so they decide that they're going to help Dodger with the clothing, and he's he's like, hey, kids, you know, will you help me do this? You know, hey, you know, and they're all right. And as soon as he leaves, and it's almost on the beat, we tear, you know, we don't just tear, we crash straight into the most unwarranted, unforeseen song and dance number ever.
No, we can do anything if we work together.
Oh, yeah, we can do anything by working with each other, yes. And it's sad because I still remember that song. It was stuck in my head from when I was a kid. And I remember when I was watching it the other day before the show, I remember singing along to it.
Oh.
So in order to, they realize they don't have the equipment. So they go to this non-union sweatshop.
Yeah.
Which blatantly says on the wall above the door, non-union sweatshop.
But at least they're nice enough to have help wanted poster on the front door.
Well, it's true. I mean, they're not conscripting people, but I mean...
You don't have to stay, but we're non-union.
They steal, because again, kids movie, they steal, you know, about 8 sewing machines, ironing, you know, machines, iron boards, and all this shit to make the clothing. And as they do that, they're seeing... As they're busting into this shop illegally and stealing their goods, they're singing a song about how they can do anything by working with each other.
Anything. We could steal from an onion and sweatshop if we work together.
Right? So they managed to sew all the clothes in an overnight sequence.
Montage.
And I say thank you for the power of the montage. And they give the clothes to Dodger. He takes the tangerine and she loves him. So she wants him to make more. So he goes again, because this whole movie is about sewing, because that's what, you know, little boys wanted to see in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was looking for.
He goes back to him and asks him to do more. And they, again, they agree, but they also say that we want to go out and have a good time. No work, all work and no play makes, you know, Greaser Greg irritable or some shit like that. So they have the idea to go to a movie.
Oh, what a great movie.
Because
they
oh, and let me tell you, because I can't tell you how many theaters around me right now regularly play Three Stooges shorts. And not just any Three Stooges shorts, the shitty ones. With Shemp.
Yes.
They're not even showing a curly Three Stooges short. No. They're showing the Shemp one.
But it does play well to the motto of gross out factors where they think he's cooking dogs.
It does. It does. If you're a fan of the Three Stooges, it's the episode where they're cooking for Persian Sultan or something like that, and they end up, you know, making the Sultan think he's actually cut up a dog to make hot dog. But all of the kids, except for Alligator and Wendy Winston, go to this movie. They want to go where the action is.
But wait, they get to this movie via ATVs, which they have at least 4 because they double up and drive off. But they never show where they get these ATVs or how they know how to function them or anything. They just all hop on them and drive off.
So it's only safe to assume that they stole them else that they have. So they get to the bar, and you know it's obvious that it's the toughest bar in the world
because there's a big old sign above the door as somebody gets thrown out of the doorway. And
this business guy gets thrown out by
somebody. As they arrive, the ATV breaks down. Ellie Goddard goes inside, and somehow Winston knows exactly what's wrong with it immediately and knows how to fix it.
Right.
Even though he's been in a trash pail for like a good few centuries and has never seen technology until he got out.
And this is leading up to one of the most ridiculous scenes, I think, in the flick. So Allie goes into, you know, first off, they're disguised, which is worse disguises, I think, than the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle disguises.
Actually, they're about equal.
But yeah, they're just wearing, like, trench they're coats wearing berets and trench coats. So Allie goes in and ends up trying to eat the toe of one
giant
of the
biker.
Bikers. So this big fight starts where they're trying to beat up Alligator, and then out of nowhere, because apparently he was in there and watching the whole thing to begin with and thought, hey, I know, I'll go outside and get my ATV. Wendy Winston drives the ATV
somehow
through one of the upper windows behind the bar.
Which, there was obviously no ramp outside to begin with. You could see the entire front half of the bar. There's nothing to ramp off to get through that window, but somehow he makes a good 5-foot jump through a window.
And he starts beating the shit out of all these bikers that are breaking puddles and trying to gut him. And, of course, he does the whole spins around and farts in one of them because it's a boys' movie. Yeah. And, like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this guy comes running up and goes, hold on. This little sucker's got guts. He's with me. Because his friend didn't just try to cannibalize one of the bar patrons. He didn't just fart in the face of the bartender.
And also,
so he's automatically cool because he's got guts.
Yeah.
Ugh. So he buys them drinks.
Yeah, Alligator snoozes up to him because it's his friend that's being glorified. And they just start throwing not just drinks, full, like, half pints. Just like giant glasses. Yeah,
it's full glasses of beer. And then it cuts back to the antique store, and Alligator and Wendy Winston are obviously plastered out of their goddamn minds.
Completely destroyed. As they have a platoon of bikers surrounding them on their motorcycles.
Right.
Escorting them home.
So they make Greaser Greg take the four-wheeler back and hide it behind the dumpster because that's the safest place they're going to set it. When they're spotted by Juice and them, because apparently they've been waiting behind there, you know, all night long.
To beat the shit out of Dodger and steal 5 more bucks, probably.
Right.
But, and then,
so
not only is there just some random guy watching and waiting for everybody, but there's no repercussion. Nobody gets angry at the fact that they've obviously just driven a good 5-10 minutes home drunk from the bar.
Right. You know, I mean, because, you know, Mancini doesn't say anything about them getting... And that's the thing, he talks about staying away from the normies, but when they get out, it's like, eh, whatever.
They do what they want.
Yeah, you know, he's a talking alligator, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. So, yeah, Juice sees him, which leads us into, you know, we're obviously like 1 hour and 10 minutes into the movie, which leads us to like the plot of the goddamn movie, finally, that it's revealed that there is a state home for the ugly.
Which is where the worst idea I've ever heard in my entire life.
There are people walking around like animal catchers.
With giant
and,
nets.
You know, with giant nets, looking for ugly people.
They just walk up to them and net them and take them away, right, never to be seen again.
There's this little girl who's playing hide-and-seek with her friends, and she's got some sort of weird-ass half-mask on. For whatever reason, I don't know.
Just to, I guess, for plot, why it's just to bring in the ugly catchers.
So they throw a net over her, and she pulls it off, and they were like, well, you better watch out, kid. You shouldn't wear a mask unless it's Halloween.
Just walk away. Like nothing happened.
My question is, this is obviously a state-run institution because it's a state home for the ugly. How did this get funded?
I don't know, because they don't just, like, talk to people. They don't, like, secure people through talking to families. They just net them, and they're never seen ever again. It's basically kidnapping.
It is. And not only that, they put a bounty out for ugly people.
They do.
Because eventually, you know, the kids decide that they agree to make the clothes for Tangerine's...
Yes, because Dodger runs up to Tangerine, and the kids follow him to Tangerine's house, which is literally like a door away from where he works, apparently.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, they're gross. And he's like, they're my friends. Give them a chance. They made the clothes that you like so much. And then she ensues to create a sweatshop in Mancini's basement.
She does. And then they should have just stole that non-union sweatshop and put it over, you know, Mancini's treasures sign. But once they finally get the clothing done, they want to go to the fashion show to see what, you know, the spoils of their labor.
Because, you know, the town department store is having a fashion show for Tangerines, which is her label.
Right. So their big thing was, okay, well, we don't want to be seen, so we're gonna wear disguises. But they're disguised. They were gonna dress up like clowns. So naturally, Tangerine throws a fit and locks the kids inside
the basement.
Inside the basement, and runs off with the key.
And at this point, there's Mancini supposedly being out there trying to figure out how to get into this. But basically, what is a jail guarded by bloodthirsty German shepherds? That is the state house for the ugly.
Not even that. Mancini makes the comment that, you know, he wishes he would have tried to look for it before, and he didn't want to believe such a place existed. So they make it think like it's going to be something, you know, kind of, you know, off in the middle of nowhere, you know, kind of hidden away, and maybe like, you know, it is. I mean, it obviously is driven by every day by, you know, hundreds of people on a main road, and basically all it is chicken wire fencing and, you know, some barbed wire fencing surround on top of it, and that's it.
It's a guard out front with two giant German shepherds that want to rip everybody's face off.
Right.
And he's trying to figure out how to break into this place as Dodger is just going off to a fashion show and lets her lock them away in the basement.
And she somehow, I don't remember seeing her do it, but she somehow slips Juice the key.
Which doesn't make any sense, because they got into the car together, her and Dodger, and then went to the fashion store.
Yeah.
And then somehow between them and there, the only thing I can imagine is she lets him go inside first and said she's going to park the car. So she must have done it when she went to park the car.
Yeah. why do we need this continuity? Fuck you. But Juice, the Amazon, and random bully number two kidnap the kids and take them to the state home for the ugly, where they're given what looks like a fairly sizable bounty.
It's a nice little wad of money. It's got to be at least $200 there.
So, I mean, it's not like this place is hurting for money. So they're obviously getting a fairly decent, you know,
government funding or state funding. Yeah, state funding.
Yeah. So, we get our first look inside the state home for the ugly.
And all it is giant animal-esque cages, what you'd see at, like, one of those old, crappy
like a large pound
movies that
something.
Had... Yeah, it's like one of those movies where, in the old days, that were just crappy, and this had all the animal smugglers, and, like, just had the wall of cages. That's all it is. Just a wall of cages with cement floors with hay everywhere.
And each one of the cages has a different person in it, and it's got a sign on it that's saying, you know, why they're in there. And the people that you see...
Santa Claus, Abe Lincoln.
Santa Claus, because Santa Claus is too fat.
Abe Lincoln's too skinny.
Gandhi, okay.
Too bald.
Mahatma Gandhi, too bald.
There's some random clown that's too silly.
Too silly. There's some... He looks like a caveman.
Too hairy.
Who's too hairy.
Some guy in a tutu who's too weird.
Yeah. And then you get this one lard cage that they stick the kids in. They're too ugly. So, they have Mahatma Gandhi, one of the greatest pacifists and unificationist leaders in the world. They have Abraham Lincoln, who somehow survived being shot in the back of the head by John Wilkes Booth.
And then
and has managed to live
later.
Centuries later.
They must have taken him off to the hospital where they had some secret technology to save his life and then freeze him just to be brought back and unthawed and brought straight to the stay home for the ugly.
Right.
And they got Santa who brings joy to children everywhere. And then you just got random
odd people. Those guys should be putting goddamn cells anyway. A bunch of fucking freaks. But they make the claim that The kids are starting to cry, so the guards are like, well, they're crying. You want me to go shut them up? And he's like, nah, they'll be gone soon. He's like, what do you mean? And the guy starts bringing his hands together and making this the most epic compactor noise ever.
It's very good.
Intimating that they're going to put these kids and all these people, including Abraham Lincoln, in a trash compactor and just crush them.
And then it goes to saying that he was happy that he's working there now because he got transferred from some laboratory somewhere. That was sickening to work at because of the tests being done on humans.
The things that the scientists would do to people. So I'd rather go. Which makes you wonder what the hell he was doing there if crushing people in garbage compactors seemed pleasant. They go to the
fashion show.
They go back to the fashion show, and Juice shows up, and they let on to Dodger what happened.
And he starts freaking out and blatting like a giant girl. Swinging wildly at Juice and Random Thug Number 2.
It was almost one of those scenes where, you know, Random Thug Number 2 puts out his hand and holds Dodger's head as Dodger's swinging at the air.
Just full circles.
But Tangerine that's where she turns into a royal bitch, when she's just kind of standing there like, you know, yeah, I double-crossed the kids, yeah, I fucked you over, yeah, we sold them out to the state home for the ugly, where they're going to get stuck in a compactor, what are you going to do about it?
So he just cries.
Like, holy shit.
And gets carried off and thrown into a dumpster. And then just...
Because that'll secure him.
Yeah. All they do is drop the lid and then walk away, and like 2 seconds after he just hops out. And then Juice goes... and rips off Tangerine's necklace for telling him that where they put the kids.
Right. That'll learn. That'll learn. God damn it. So he goes and gets Captain Mancini, and they go back to the place and realize that they're not going to be able to break in. So what does he do? He instantly goes to the toughest bar in the world.
Toughest bar in the world.
And tells him that the little guys need help.
And immediately, every giant man in there storms out and starts revving on a motorcycle. And he just hops on the back of one of the motorcycles.
But there's this one couple in the bar that is just sitting in the bar like they've got no fucking clue what's going on. So they're just kind of watching everybody else tear out of the bar. And they're just sitting there drinking like, man, whatever.
And then he instinctively goes out and sits on a specific motorcycle. Like, he knows this person has like an extra seat. And then he's going to drive off with them. And they just haul off, and he doesn't even tell them where to go or anything. They just go.
Right.
And obviously, with that mean, there's at least 10, 15 motorcycles. You're not going to be able to hear anything when you're driving. So they just happen to know exactly where they're going.
Right. And they chain up the bars on the windows to their motorcycles and just rip them right out of the wall. Easy as you please.
And as this is going on, somehow Captain Mancini, that couldn't get in before, is now inside, and he has magically made his way inside and is going all, like, Splinter Cell through without being caught.
Right, and the best part is that when he pulls out the flash paper and lights it on fire and throws it in the guy's face, like, ooh, sorcery.
They just karate chops him once and he falls over.
Right.
Just,
I was expecting to go judo chop, kind of like Austin Powers.
Then he just proceeds to unlock the cage and let the kids out, and then they go to town on this guy. This guy's already somehow knocked out, and they just go to town. They fart in his face.
Yeah, like...
They Phil breathes garlic breath at him. They rip his pants.
Oh, yeah, the pants ripping. And that's the thing, though, is that this is when the movie starts getting really kind of, like, clothe-rippy. Because they rip his pants off. Then they instantly decide they're going to go fuck up Juice and Tangerine's show.
Yeah, first they let everybody out of this place. And
they free all the two ugly people.
Yeah. And they all get out of the stay home, and then they're all like, we want retribution. And Captain Mantine's like, well, you know, no, we're on a roll. We shouldn't quit. Let's go to this fashion show and mess stuff up.
Why quit while we're ahead?
So they somehow all pile into this tiny two-seater that Captain Mancini has. And
yeah, he drives a little Volkswagen Beetle.
And they drive off to the fashion show.
And And just the most chaotic, bizarre scene ensues because they just decide that they're not really going to go for any kind of vengeance. They just want to fuck shit up.
Well, first you see...
Which just seems to be anything they do... That seems to be the only thing they do but the, anywhere is just fuck shit up.
Well, the first thing they do is they come and they act like they're going to be all smart about it. And they see Juice talking on the telephone. And which goes to show that he's got to be some kind of high-up thug of some sort because it sounds like he's doing some kind of a drug deal over this phone. Talk about bringing something over the border. So he's got to be making big bucks off of that. So why he's rolling this kid for $5 every other day?
It's principle, baby.
Then so they go in and they knock him and plug number two out, and then just go and this chaos ensues.
Well, not only that, it's like throughout the entire movie, you know, each one of the characters, the Garbage Pail Kids, have been playing up whatever gross thing it is they do. You know, Alligator eats human parts. Wendy Winston's constantly farting. Greaser Greg's not really gross. He's just kind of like a 50s greaser that carries. And we forgot to mention the scene where he's obviously, you know, playing doctor with messy testicles.
Inside of, like, a ventriloquist chest.
Yeah, it looks like a ventriloquist dummy chest, and, you know, he comes out, and he's got a stethoscope around his neck, and he's like, I'm not done examining you yet, and she smacks him, and he's like, yes, you are. But Messy Tess, he's constantly playing with snot. Farting. Phil is constantly breathing.
Yeah, Nerd Ned is himself. Pissing himself constantly, and then we've got Foul Phil's always breathing in people's faces.
But we never see Valerie Vomit do anything.
She never vomits.
They kind of play up like she might.
Yeah, but she never does.
But she never actually does until the end where they're fighting Amazon and random thug number two.
Make my day.
Oh yeah, because random thug number two doubles up and lays into Valerie Vomit, punching her in the
as
stomach.
As hard as he can.
Because punching a little kid in the stomach is a goddamn good time. Why? What? Because it's a kids movie.
And she doesn't move. She doesn't flinch. She doesn't get thrown off of the thing she's standing at. She just sits there and takes it. Bam!
Right, and everyone else kind of allows it to happen because it's like they know it's going to happen because they say they start screaming like head for the hills and they all run off. And she turns and she gives it the most satisfied look on her face and then begins puking.
This bright green toxic vomit.
It looks like phloem. It looks like phloem that she spews, except a little bit more liquid.
And it's got like Lucky Charm chunks in it.
And it cuts to a shot of a close up of her face. Like the mouth is obviously wedged open,
and it just looks.
And the only thing that can move is her eyes. So the weird animatronic eyes are just batting back and forth.
And it just seems like they have like a hose in the mouth, just spewing it out.
It's her eyes. I think are the most disturbing part about it. Just because they're both so
jumping
creepy.
Back and forth.
Right, and. So, and then, you know, they get barfed on.
Then as this is going on, everybody else is running around ripping the clothes off of all of the female models that are in the fashion.
Every one of the models ends up in their underwear by the end of it.
And they don't shy away from filming this either. They're just close-ups of bras.
Oh, no, no.
There's butt shots.
There, you know, and that was one of the things, you know, they had to have been sitting around like, okay, we're going to have parents at this, you know, seeing this in the theater with their kids. What can we give them to say, sorry.
We're sorry.
And so we get to the final showdown between, you know, our hero, the young and plucky Dodger, and the villainous Juice. And it's actually a fairly decent, like, realistic fight scene, because it's a lot of rolling around on the ground, you know, throwing each other around type shit. And I was rather surprised how well the choreography was on that.
But that's the only thing in all of this chaos that made any sense. As he just spears Juice as hard as he can.
Oh yeah, like two of the kids grab hold of him and he just spears him and it looks like it hurt. It really did.
And then he just continues to wail on him as he cries as hard as he can.
Oh yeah. Yeah, just starts bawling his eyes out and Captain Mancini's just kind of looking on. He's like, alright, he's had enough.
So he's not.
So he reaches over and
the most pathetic voice I've ever heard.
So they get back to the antique shop, and Tangerine shows back up, and she's all like reticent, and like she's all like, you know, I'm so sorry, blah blah blah, you know, we could still do this together, you know. She almost like she's like, I want to be with you now, and he's like, no, I don't think you're pretty.
I don't think you're pretty anymore. Then goes back inside to talk to his garbage pail friends. As Captain Mancini thinks that he's finally found the spell to put the kids back in the pail. Forcibly put them back in there so that they can't get out.
So he sits down at his harpsichord and starts, he tells the kids to, you know, close their eyes as he's doing it. Like, they're just gonna sit there and be like, okay, let's get back
in the pail. And then vision going in the pail.
And somehow starts playing this song backwards, like he's taken a record and has spun it backwards. It's
garbage,
got that exact same sound.
He's got the Garbage Pail Kids song backwards, because for some reason he knows that they have a song.
Right. Oh, yeah, that comes into play, you know, at the last minute. And instead of pulling the kids back in, he somehow manages to pull himself into the garbage pail, where he ends up, you know, ass first.
And as all the kids have already escaped with his eyes were closed and just walked out the front door.
Right.
Never to be seen again.
And as if to never come back. And instead of, you know, because I want to protect the kids because it's a cruel and dangerous world out there. You get the scene of, they'll be fine.
Just give them a shoulder shrug to the camera.
Who cares if they don't have jobs or money or any kind of survival skills? Well,
they seem to be all right stealing stuff while they live there, so they should be all right.
And they went on to become master criminals.
P.N. That's a happy story for you kids.
But one of the things they talk about, and one of the things I forgot to mention this part too, but when they were breaking him out of the home for the ugly Dodger asshole, what happened to the other children? And he was like, we were too late. And he does this whole hand. He's like, do you remember the garbage truck? And he's like, yeah. And he does a whole hand squeezy thing again, dictating to us the fact that they went ahead and crushed the Garbage Pail Kids' friends.
Crushed them in the back of a dump truck, like a garbage truck.
Because this is a kid's movie.
Crushed them.
This has got to be the darkest, and I've watched, you know, things like The Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, and things like that, when Jim Henson got into really experimentally, and almost I would say he was like doing a lot of drugs at the time.
Dropping acid.
But the fact that, you know, not only is there an underage kid being seduced by, you know, someone who's at least 10 to 15 years older than him, so we've got the whole... We've got the whole sex thing going on. We've got, you know, severed fingers, toes, and eyes being eaten, consumed on a regular basis by a walking alligator.
We've got theft. We've got drinking and driving. And we've got...
Right.
partial nudity. And it's just, it's all lumped into just one fantastic kids movie.
It's... I get that as a kid, as a young boy, I was more interested in the farting and the puking and the snotting because I was a boy, you know? But the fact that adults made this movie and thought that this was a great idea, and apparently, according to IMDb, Anthony Newley, after they wrapped him, he hung around the set to help out anywhere he could because he believed so deeply in this movie. A man that had spent decades in Hollywood, mind you.
The last thing I want to touch up on is through this entire movie, from space trash can to ending with them just escaping, is they never actually explain anything that's happened through the entire movie. There's no origination for anything. They're literally just let things happen.
It's like the Joker said. He's like, do I look like, you know, a man who has a plan? I just do things.
It's basically, it looks like they just secretly had more than one writer and just had them each write one section of the movie just to get it done. Like, you take half an hour, you take half an hour, you take half an hour, and they smushed them all together. And that was a script.
It feels like that. It really does. Like, you know, it almost seems like they may have taken, you know, bits and pieces of the very adult version that John Carl Buechler wanted to make and then threw it together with, like, you know, a real family-friendly kids' fair and put it in a blender and,
ta-da,
you know, shit it onto a paper and said, film it!
That's done!
So, yeah, so that was a good portion of my childhood. I was watching the Garbage Pail Kids.
I'm sorry.
I mean, yes, it is what it is. Going, but it's definitely not a movie that I can... I enjoyed watching it this time just because I hadn't seen it in probably 20 years. And I, you know, and I was interested in seeing how well it held up. Apparently,
not at all.
Not at all, because I don't think it really held up at the beginning.
Now, I've seen some bad movies. And this one was very bad, and that's concerning. I've even went and spent money to watch Jennifer's Body.
Right. I mean, I paid to go see Inspector Gadget in the theaters, you know?
And, yeah, so, I'm still saying that this is one of the worst movies I have ever seen.
Yeah, I will not deny that at all. And I kind of feel bad having you sit through it.
You should.
Oh, well. So, I guess that's our show. Next week, we're going to be taking a look at one of... I've watched this movie recently here and actually still really enjoy it. I'm gonna say it's still a bad, bad movie. But next week, we are watching Howard the Duck. So, what we would like you to do is, if you're listening in, and I hope you are, if you want to go, if you've seen Howard the Duck, if you remember Howard the Duck, or if you've not seen Howard the Duck, you can contact us by calling 512-537-9557, or you can email us at nostalgicharpoon@gmail.com, or at gmail.com. And tell us what you think of Howard the Duck, or if you've seen Garbage Pail Kids movies and you want to tell us what you think of it, please let us know. We'll read your email, we'll play your call on the show. So, I guess that's it. Until next time.
See you later.
Thanks for listening.